Brian Moore there with the second of the questions this evening for the Bluffer's Guide to Cricket. Right, let's get back to our studio guest, Stephen Sylvester, the sports psychologist, is with us. And Stephen, I mentioned to you a few moments ago that I wanted to get into the Indian side of things. I mean, there is a team, what, 2 weeks ago, was absolutely flying. They're 1-0 up in a series and have just totally, seemingly physically disintegrated, but more importantly, mentally disintegrated. They now have to pick themselves up for this game at the Oval. How do you do it? How do you go about that? Or can it be done?
Yeah, it can be done, but it is very difficult, and it depends on the level of willingness and commitment each of those members of the team have to look at themselves in the mirror and to say, right, let's sit down and let's try and understand why our decision making under stress was the way it was, particularly with our shot selection. You know, what's going on in the team where the decisions across the board were poor? We know that from a psychological point of view, there are psychological battles obviously going on, and it's about trying to unravel those individually and as a group. So if I was working with the Indians, I'd want to talk to them individually, for each player for a good hour and a half, 2 hours. I'd want to try and find out exactly what they were doing. I'd like to look at their recording and watch a bit of how they played and look at their decision making. And I would be making assessments as to how much of their play was driven by ego and how much of it was driven by just the commitment to the team.
Right, Virat Kohli.
Yeah.
Terrific player.
Yeah.
Could be a megastar of the future. Has an absolute blind spot when it comes to Jimmy Anderson.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Well, first things first, he's been out several times to the same ball. Mm-hmm. And they are absolutely fantastic deliveries.
Okay.
Let's be honest. They're not half trackers.
No.
They're balls in and around the right area with nibble each way and swing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, let's be clear. But, you know, the question that comes to my mind is who's sitting down with him and helping him understand why he's repeating the same technical play at the ball. Now, a lot of people say you cannot make technical changes during a series, during play.
Or you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's one of those things. It's down to the individual and their particular psychology. Can I talk about my technique? Can I make changes? Do I go in the net and make some adjustments or not? And we all know cricketers, particularly batters, once they've got their method, they are very resistant to change. They want to keep that method in the way they want to. And now he's...
Well, Alistair Cook's done it in the series, hasn't he? Alistair Cook has made a massive shift from going miles back and across to batting outside of his crease. Yes, but his trigger movement now is not back and across anymore. Yeah. It's just across.
Yeah.
So he's decided, listen, enough's enough, guys. Yeah. I've got to score some runs somehow.
Yeah.
And I need to change something in order to do that. So
that's
what you're saying about Virat Kohli. He needs to take the ego out of it and look at himself a bit and go, I need to do something different here.
Yeah. If you're not generating training, thinking, and this is what Mo's very good at, and Chris Rogers, who I worked with through the last home and abroad test matches, the Ashes, he is very good at generating learning as you go. So I've just been dismissed this way. How can I generate understanding and learning so that I can make a self-correction next time along? And, you know, if I was working with Cody, I'd say, look, you're not generating learning. What's stopping you thinking about how your method is and how can you make some changes to that method as you go?
Now, Stephen, several England sides of, the 1980s lost games in 3 days, and we all knew what would happen the following day.
Yeah.
Naughty boy nets.
Yeah.
The balance between, and you're talking about going out and correcting issues and whatever, or actually taking some time away and getting your mind right and working out. Sports, we all know it did, of course, but sports psychology officially didn't exist in the 80s.
Yeah.
It would be get in that net, work harder, and it will come true.
Yeah.
Where's the actual line in that?
Well, I think, I think the nature of modern day sports psychology is that you get in the nets and you do your psychology in the classroom, and then you get in the nets and do your technical work in the, you know, separate to the psychology. That's what we know of. I call it almost first generation psychology, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
You got education in the classroom about the way you think. You then go out to the nets and you then go in the nets and try and work it out. I think second generation psychology is all about getting much more interactive with the psychology and the technique. And so what I would argue is, if the team could assess their shot selection and the way they went about that second innings, and there was some understanding, then you could have a real purposeful net session that could look at particular areas. And I guarantee you there are players in that Indian team that would have views on what Kohli should do, for example. Yeah. And one of the exercises I do with, particularly in football, because they're a little bit more open just to saying what they think, football versus cricket in terms of culture.
That's interesting.
You just have the team call out what's going on. So what do you think we could do to improve? Why did this happen the way it happened to us?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about that is you mentioned cricket not being quite so open to that sort of thing, but hasn't Ian Bell played exactly that role with Marinelli in terms of helping him to bowl the ball a bit quicker, to up his pace a bit, to give, you know, international class batsmen less time to read him and get down to him? And isn't that exactly what you're talking about?
Exactly that. You know, it's a little bit like old school society, extended family, where Aunt Sally would talk to you about what you're doing, not just your mum. You'd have everybody who's within the family playing a very active part in helping. And I know Mo speaks very highly of what Ian's done for him in just helping him understand the context of international test cricket.
And it's a vested interest then, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, he's not doing it, he's doing it for the benefit of the whole team.
But you don't want to go too far to the old too many cooks getting involved with too much of it. The last thing you want to do is cloud the thinking, isn't it? You don't want to put too much in there.
Well, this is the...
And that's a huge balancing point, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, this is the whole continuum about the culture. If you've got a culture that's more on the individual end and selfish, then it's too many cooks. Everyone's got an opinion. Hold on, I've got to hold on to my game, my technique. Who's saying what? I'm second-guessing everyone else. Where do I stand? So if you're at the selfish end of the continuum, then you don't want too much comment. If you're at the selfless end and you're open, truthful, free, and have great levels of freedom, everyone can have an opinion. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really take on board any agenda to the opinion. You just hear it, and if you generate learning, you then say, is that any good for me or not? Someone said I should be a little bit more open in my stance. Someone said I should get my weight transfers a little bit more forward, so therefore I can get at the ball quicker and I can hit the ball through a narrower V. That's certainly what Cook's done. So he's definitely chatted with the right people. Yeah, ECB have got a lot of good people around him and have backed him, and we've got a young team all, you know, burgeoning on good advice.
Has sports psychology, do you think, shaken off that sort of horrific mental image of, you know, lying down on a chaise long, tell me about your father kind of thing? You know, it never was like that, of course, but yeah. that whole sort of stigma of psychology.
Very difficult. I mean, you know, in my work, yeah, it's been great with Mo and Chris Rogers, two advocates of my approach to helping people, which is a facilitation about a journey about how you play and all the component parts of that, so you can reflect and look at what you do. Yeah, that's great, but in the kind of general world, it's seen as, oh my God, what's happening here? Are you getting inside my head? What do you, you know, yeah, do you really, are you going to really tamper with what's good? And so there is a lot of negativity, especially in professional football. I have a lot of undisclosed clients that come to my clinic that have issues, that want to talk through, you know, highly successful footballers that have got issues that they want to talk through, and we talk through them, and it's all under the radar.
And it's fascinating as well that Chris Rogers, a man with his background, his experience, still feels the need, if you like. It's always an ongoing process.
Always an ongoing process, that's the thing. It's not about, and you know, if you're selfless and you're looking at what you do to do the best possible thing for the team, then it's an ongoing process, because every day is not going to be great. You're going to have ups and downs, but if you're doing it for the right reasons, you generate